You sit in a doctor's office, they hand you a recommendation, and you nod, because who are you to ask a question to a doctor? But what if asking better questions is exactly what your health needs? Today's guest is a board-certified physician with over 36 years of experience, and he's here to do something unusual. Help you become a smarter, more empowered patient. Not to disrupt medicine, but to be a real partner in your own care, to recognize when a claim is misleading, to ask questions that get you better answers, and to take a genuine ownership of your health. This is a conversation that could change the way you walk into every appointment. Now, my guest today brings a rare perspective, a doctor encouraging patients to think more critically and participate more fully in their own care. Dr. Joe Jacko is a board-certified physician in internal medicine and sports medicine based in Columbus, Ohio, with more than 36 years of experience and a medical degree from the Ohio State University College of Medicine. He's a health educator and author who champions a partnership approach to medicine, giving patients trustworthy information so they can make decisions that fit their own goals. Dr. Jacko, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stacey, for having me. I'm looking forward to this discussion. And listen, before we start, though, I just want to acknowledge the great job that you do. I was looking over a lot of your podcasts, and you cover a tremendous range of topics that I'm sure your listeners appreciate it, and I hope they appreciate it enough to give you a good 5-star rating so you can continue this good work that you're doing. So I want to thank you on their behalf.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet of you. Now, Dr. Jacko, you encourage people to be active partners in their care rather than passive recipients. I love that. Now, why is it so important for patients to ask questions and think critically about their own health?
Well, it's important because you have to get the right information. There's a lot. One of the things I try to do is help patients navigate this medical information landscape. And there's a lot of misinformation and misrepresented information. And this may sound strange to hear from a doctor, but a lot of it comes from the medical profession itself. And so I detailed in a book that I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit called Bamboozled, Duped, and Hoodwinked, the keys to escaping the tricks, deceptions, and the half-truths of the medical industry. So we have to do a better job giving patients all the information that they need to make the appropriate decision for themselves. When you think about it, we are losing medical freedom. A lot of our healthcare decisions are being made for us directly and indirectly. For instance, you know, insurance companies dictate a lot of what can be done and not be done. But we as physicians sometimes will steer you in a certain direction by the way we present the data. So, you know, we might say this pill will reduce your heart attacks by 30%, but what does that really mean? So you need more information than that. So you have to ask good questions. Don't be afraid. You have to be your own advocate. And you really want a physician, in my opinion, that's going to partner with you. I think too much today we have this paternalistic approach where I'm the doctor, you're the patient, you're going to do what I tell you. And I just don't think that really accomplishes very much. You want a doctor that's going to listen to you, trying to find out what your goals are, and then sit with you and develop a game plan to get from point A to point B.
I love that. And what's the difference between a patient who just follows orders and one who is a true partner in their care in terms of the outcomes that you've seen over the 36 years?
Well, patients who take a more active role in their health certainly are going to get better outcomes. We've been kind of conditioned to trust your doctor and to trust what they're saying. And we as physicians have been told to trust our education. And that's where we have a little bit of a breakdown. Our training is very carefully controlled or manipulated to serve the pharmaceutical medical complex. So if you ask more critical questions, you're going to get a better outcome. You're going to have a better understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. So the first thing you ought to do when the doctor proposes an intervention is, what are we trying to accomplish with this intervention? What are we trying to accomplish with this medication? You don't take a medication to lower your blood pressure or your blood sugar or your cholesterol. You're taking those medications to prevent a heart attack or a stroke. That's the real reason. And sometimes that gets kind of lost in the translation. So I would always recommend that you ask a doctor, what are we trying to accomplish by this recommendation or this intervention? What's our end point here?
Right. That's really good information to know. Now, we're absolutely flooded with health information and it contradicts itself. How can a regular person start to tell the difference between a solid medical claim and a misleading one?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because it's even harder for us as physicians to discern that. But you have to, I would recommend always do your own research, preferably before you go in to see a doctor. Have a list of questions that you're ready to ask. The biggest thing we kind of hide from patients, like let's take heart disease, for instance. We call it the leading killer, and it is. But that sounds horrible. But we have 700,000 people die from heart disease every year. But there's 340 million people on the planet, in the United States. So that comes to 0.2%. When you look at it that way, doesn't sound as bad. So that means you have to know 500 people to know one person who died of a heart attack this past year. And what's interesting, most people only know 600 people. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that you frequently have time on your side to make lifestyle changes. You lose the weight, change your diet, get some exercise before you automatically jump into a prescription. But we as physicians, we're very eager to correct the problem. We don't want you to have that heart attack. So we kind of, force feed these medications on you.
Right.
Perhaps prematurely.
That's so true. That is so true. Now, what are the red flags that something you're reading or being told might not be the full picture?
When it comes to the statistics, the thing they'll say frequently is the relative risk reduction. All right. So if you take this medicine, you'll have a 30% reduction in your risk of heart attack. But what does that mean at the end? So you need more information. You have to know what the baseline is for that problem. So for instance, if you look at, I'll give you a real study on Lipitor or atorvastatin. In their study that got FDA approval, for every 100 people that got the placebo, so a dummy drug, 3 people had a heart attack after 40 months. For every person everybody, 100 people that took the Lipitor over 40 months, 2 had a heart attack. So they can go on TV and say it reduces your risk of heart attack 33%. What they don't tell you, though, is 100 people have to take the drug for 40 months for one person to get that benefit. So you have to be careful on how that information is presented. So when I wrote the book, I came across another book called How to Lie with Statistics. And it was interesting. It was published in like early 1950s. So we've been lying with statistics all along. And we do that to get people to act or behave in a certain way.
That's so true. It's so true. You see it all the time, all around us.
It's everything. And we're getting bombarded by what I call the half-truth. And I spend like a whole chapter in the book talking about how we fall to the half-truth, why it's used. And it's very pervasive in medicine.
Right. This feels so practical and useful. Most of us don't even know what to ask. When someone's sitting across from their doctor, like what are the better questions that they should be asking?
So actually, we put together a cheat sheet that I'm going to have on my website, and then you can just print it off. So the first question I think you should ask is, what is your view of the patient or the doctor-patient relationship? I mean, that's you want someone that's going to work with you. And the other thing I think you want to ask is, do you have any additional training beyond your board certification? The more training a physician has, the more tools they have in their toolbox to treat you. If all they have is a prescription pad, they're going to be writing prescriptions all day long. If you go to a surgeon, they're going to talk to you about surgery. So you want a physician who has a broad background and then who can look at your needs and where you are and your goals and then try to figure out what is the best treatment for you to accomplish that goal. So that's one question. I think, as I alluded to earlier before, you always want to ask, what are we trying to gain with this intervention or this treatment? What are we trying to accomplish here? The other thing I would recommend, especially, we need to get back to more preventive medicine and changes in lifestyle, is I would ask a doctor, what kind of exercise program and nutrition program do you follow? And does it work? And if it doesn't work, then why are you doing it? Why are you recommending that to your patients? And another thing is just, does your doctor look healthy? My first year in practice, I was at a place called the Cooper Clinic in Dallas. Dr. Cooper's world renowned. He wrote the book Aerobics. Okay. So I had a patient that I had to refer to a cardiologist, and I was new to Dallas. I didn't know anybody. So I asked a couple of doctors. They gave me a name of a cardiologist. And about a month later, I saw this patient. I asked him how his visit went. He goes, why did you refer me to him? I go, what do you mean? I said, he goes, he's 300 pounds and has a pack of cigarettes in his shirt pocket. So, we as physicians, we need to do a better job leading us. We have to be better role models ourselves.
Yes.
And if you look at the healthcare industry, particularly hospitals, I mean, we have some of the most unfit, unhealthy people working in the hospitals.
That's true. That's very true. And how does someone do that respectfully, like as a partner, without feeling like they're challenging or offending their physician?
Yeah, that's a delicate question. I don't know if I have a really good advice on how to do that. I think you could probably tell as the conversation is going if they're going to be one of these top-down, I'm the boss type persons. And you can just maybe set up that initial visit more or less as an interview and let them know, listen, I'm here. I'm thinking of establishing with you. I'd like to know a little bit more about your background. What's your view on certain use of medications and things that you do in your own personal life? So I would kind of approach it that way, maybe set it up as a just initial interview and no obligation on either party.
Right. Now, this is for the listeners out there. If you ever left a doctor's appointment wishing that you've asked for more, this conversation is for you. So stay with us. Follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week, we bring you the experts who help you take smart, informed control of your health. Now, you spent decades in sports medicine, and you focus a lot on what people can control themselves. How much of our long-term health really is within our own hands through exercise, nutrition, and lifestyle?
At least 80%. So getting to age 80 is almost all lifestyle. Getting to 100, genetics take over. Getting past 100. So lifestyle is extremely important. We have a lot of challenges in our society. Number one, we live in a very toxic society. It's hard to get clean food, clean water, and so on. And the other challenge we have is that our ancestors didn't have is we have this 24/7, 365 access to food. It's just not good. So we overeat. We're very sedentary. You cannot out-exercise 8 hours of sitting. So, and it starts really when we're young. You know, we're getting rid of physical education in schools. That needs to change. So we just need a whole society kind of do-over, if you will. Yeah, but 80%, you get into age 80, that's mostly lifestyle. Getting past 100 is going to be genetics take over.
Right. Now, for someone who feels overwhelmed and doesn't know where to start, what are the highest impact things that they can actually do?
So I would say the most important thing is diet. So let's go over some of the habits. So diet, exercise, sleep, stress management, and avoiding bad habits like smoking, excessive alcohol, not wearing a seatbelt. So those all are at play. I would say, though, diet's the most important because it's a 24/7, 365 challenge. I think it's pretty easy to get patients to exercise because we think about it, it's like an hour, 4 or 5 days a week, maybe a little bit more depending on your motivation. That's pretty easy. But eating healthy is a challenge. And the problem is you can eat clean for a while and then you have that one bad day where you slip and then it's like you feel like a failure. And it's like, oh, I screwed up. I might as well just go back to my old ways. But, each meal is an opportunity to excel and do better. Then sleep is really important. And then the other thing, really, stress is, just prevalent. It's all over the place these days for any number of reasons. And I don't know if we do really a good job counseling our patients on stress management. And we all suffer from it from time to time.
Right. It's very true.
It's our own problem because I think we're just so driven a lot, and a lot of our stress is self-induced. I mean, I know it was my own life. I got like 4 things going on at one time. It's like, I really don't need to do all 4 of these things at once. So I'm kind of responsible for my own stress.
Right. That's very true. Now, you encourage people to look at medical and public health information thoughtfully rather than just accepting it at face value. So why isn't all medical information as complete or objective as it appears?
Well, I think there's a financial bent to a lot of the information being presented. So let me just read one quote from the book that addresses
this. Sure.
So this is a Dr. Horn. He was the editor for The Lancet, which is a British journal. He says, journals have devolved into information laundering operations for the pharmaceutical industry. He also says, the case against science is straightforward. Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue. So anyway, that kind of, I think you get to where I'm going with this. So there's many times a financial incentive to present data in a way that's going to get you to act in a certain way.
Right.
So now how you figure that out is I would encourage you to do your own. I would go to Google. I don't have a problem if patients go to Google. They always say, I know I shouldn't do this, but I'd like it because it tells me what they're concerned about.
Right.
You know, a lot of times it's something like cancer. I could say, listen, I'm 99% sure you don't have cancer, but we can do these tests to make you, if it makes you feel more comfortable. So I like when patients come in with those types of questions. I think with AI now, I think it's going to be a huge advantage because you could get so much information so quickly. Now, you may need a doctor to help interpret that information, but I think that's a good starting point. Like, what is, like, you know, how many people have to be on a drug for one person to get the benefit? You can AI that really quickly. And you could find out if it's something worth taking. For instance, depending on the blood pressure medicine, 86 to 140 people have to take a blood pressure medicine for 5 years to avoid a heart attack.
Right.
Now, if you knew it, if you got that data, you probably would not take the medicine. You probably would start to focus on your diet and exercise first before you jumped into that. But that information, it's out there. You got to hunt for it though. So I would say do that. I think a good resource is a website called The NNT. So it stands for the number needed to treat. And you could put in any drug like statin drugs and it will tell you how long a person has to take a drug to get actual benefit from it.
Really?
Yeah. So if you look at like statin drugs, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have your cholesterol lowered, but the data on that is for every 20 patients who take a statin for 5 years, one person benefits from it. And this is people who have existing heart disease, much worse than that for people who just are healthy but having high cholesterol.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now, and how does someone stay open and informed, taking science seriously while also thinking critically and asking good questions?
I think you have to inject some common sense into some of this. And we hear, you know, particularly during COVID, we heard about science, we have to follow the science and so on. But the science contradicts each other quite a bit. And I think we've gone from a society where we didn't have enough information to one where we have too much information now. And in both cases, I think you have to exercise a little bit of wisdom to try to sort out what makes sense and what is real. And it's hard. It's hard for us. It's hard for me even to figure out what to believe.
Right.
But if you keep asking questions, and I think the most important question is why. If you keep asking why, you go down the rabbit holes and you get to the root cause of a problem. And a lot of what we do in medicine, we're just treating symptoms. We're not really getting to the root cause.
Right. That's so true. Now, where's the healthy balance? Taking care of yourself, knowing what questions to ask and understanding everything. How do you have a healthy balance with all of it?
There are patients who are so consumed with good health that that's all they do all day long. Like their job is to be healthy. I'm not sure that's healthy either. You still have to live life. And so you can go too far either way. And I mentioned this in the book. The person who's all consumed with their health is going to die just like the person who totally neglects their health. So what are you trying to accomplish? Really, what you're really trying to do is to live longer, younger, live healthier for a longer period of time. At the end of the day, we're all going to die. And we have people across this planet who are living to over 100 years old who know nothing about science. And then we have people who, you know, are longevity experts, and I consider myself in that category as well, but probably none of us are going to live to be 100. So, like, do you want to follow our advice, or why not just study the person who's lived to be 100 and find out what they do? I mean, you're probably familiar with the blue zones are. Yeah. So a lot of it is just social interaction. Social relationships are very important to our health. And a lot of times we want to live in this isolation. We don't want to do things. We want to stay home, cooped up all the time. But if you look at the people who live in the blue zones, a lot of times there's two, three generations living in the same house. The elderly are revered. They're respected for their wisdom. They're very active. Most of them are growing. They have gardens. They're growing some of their own food. They're walking a lot. They're not necessarily exercising, but they're just very active.
Yeah. I had a great aunt that she lived to 103. She lived in Greece, and she had everything that she ate was grown in her backyard, and she would even pick the dandelions, and she would dry them out and make dandelion tea, which is great for detoxification, and she'd have her dandelion tea every morning, and she lived life. She was happy. She was healthy, and she lived a healthy life, but she wasn't focused on it. She was just living to live, and
Well, you make a good point. You have to live life. And some of that means you have to laugh. You have to enjoy being around other people, laugh. I think you have to be able to laugh at yourself because we all do stupid things.
So true. I agree. Now, you spent 36 years helping people improve both their health span and their lifespan. So what do you want every person listening to understand about their health, about their role in it, and about becoming a wiser, more empowered partner in their own care?
Well, you have a lot of say in your health. And we talked earlier about, your lifestyle is real critical to get to age 80. So you have to have discipline, and one discipline carries over to the other. You don't have to do 100 things every day to be healthy. Just pick out 5 things that you do religiously every day. Just stick to those 5 things. Those 5 things are going to take care of about 80% of your healthcare needs. So, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, sleep, eating right, getting some exercise, managing stress and so on. So I would focus on those basic habits. And then, you have to have a strong purpose, and I think that's really overlooked quite a bit. I've had patients who they own their own business. They have 200 employees that are dependent on them. They're not necessarily the greatest health, but they have that motivation. They have people that they have that motivation to get up every morning. They have a goal they have to accomplish. And I think we've all heard of stories of people who have retired and 30 days later they die. So you have to have a really strong purpose. And I think a lot of us don't know what that purpose is, unfortunately. And sometimes we stumble around for a while. You have a few people who know very early in life what they're meant to do. I'm probably more of a goal-oriented person where I do something, then I find something else of interest, and I keep doing different things. But you have to have a good reason to get up every morning. I personally don't think retirement's a good concept. Now, sometimes because of your occupation, you have no choice because of injuries and your work is physical. But if you do retire, patients don't spend enough time thinking of how they're going to use their time. So I have a patient who's my age, and he's an attorney, and he's thinking of retiring. I said, well, how much time do you have to fill between your commute and time at the office? He goes, I got to fill 56 hours. I said, he goes, now that I think of it, he goes, I don't think I'm going to retire. So like I look at myself, I like what I do. If I were to retire, I probably do something to help people volunteer, but I'm already doing that. So I might as well just keep doing what I'm doing.
Right.
So I would say purpose, and purpose may be the most important thing of everything that we've mentioned. I would say that you got to hone in on that one for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes your greatest need or your greatest health problem or greatest challenge that you have is the thing that you are meant to, that you were put here for.
Right. That's very true. Yeah. That's very true.
So like the way I got interested in medicine, I played a lot of sports growing up, but I was hurt a lot. I think one summer I was in 5 different emergency rooms. So that's how I got interested in medicine. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I might as well do this because I'm always hurt.
That's funny. My goodness. Now, from our conversation today, from the people who are listening, what is one or two things you'd like them to walk away with from the conversation that we had today?
You want to regain not only control of your health, but control of your healthcare decisions. So we are losing medical freedom, and that was very apparent, I think, during COVID, where, people lost jobs. We just lost a lot of freedom. You're kind of forced into doing certain things. So you want to regain your medical freedom. And so you have to be wise in, well, part of it is align yourself with the right physician or a physician who at least you see eye to eye with. So I would say you want to regain that, regain your medical freedom and your decision to choose for yourself. And then you have to just research. I don't think you should take any doctor's word at face value unless you've really had a longstanding relationship with them. And that doesn't mean you have to challenge them every question, but after the visit, maybe go back and read up something. Don't be afraid to ask questions. It's your health.
Right.
You got to be your own advocate that way. The challenge for physicians, I will tell you, more and more physicians are employed these days and they're somewhat controlled. The vast majority, we're not really acting independently anymore. The hospitals are making a lot of the decisions for us. And so you kind of have to understand how physicians are compensated. We get bonuses for achieving certain metrics. And a lot of times the fastest way to meet that metric is to put you on a medication.
Right. That's very true. Now, you recently wrote a book. So can you tell us a little about the book?
Yeah, so the title is Bamboozled, Duped, and Hoodwinked: Keys to Escaping the Tricks, Deceptions, and Half-Truths of the Medical industry. So there are people who've written about Big Pharma. There are people who've written about the FDA. There are people who've written about science isn't as pure as we think it is. People have written about COVID. Well, I address all that in the book. It's 560 pages, 380 references. There is even a chapter, does medicine matter? Okay. So if you look at life expectancy really hasn't changed. If you look at our hunter-gatherers, our ancestors, if they got past childhood, they lived as long as we do today. So despite all our advancements, we're kind of treading water. And so I address that. We do a good job in acute care. Like if you're having a heart attack or stroke and you get to the hospital, it's remarkable what we can do. We do a horrible job with chronic disease management, though, because we're relying too much on the medications and not enough on the lifestyle.
Right.
So the book also addresses how Big Pharma, how they fund everything in medicine. They fund medical schools, training. They fund medical journals. They fund organizations like the American Diabetes Association, the American Cancer Society. All these groups are getting money. So they're kind of, you know, buying favor, if you will, from these organizations. Also, the evidence is very tainted. I go through the book about 13 ways that research is manipulated to get the results that the researchers want you to believe.
Right.
And that's been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a classic study on that one. Ansel Keys is a physiologist at Minnesota. He developed the K rations for World War II, the soldiers, which were very successful in keeping our soldiers nourished during the war. He then, in 1953, he did a study and he looked at, he pulled data from two different studies, the World Health Organization and some agriculture and farming organization. And he plotted the risk of heart disease based on diet and fat consumption. And it's referred to as a six-country study, but that's not the title of it. But he showed this nice linear progression of the more fat you eat, the higher your chance of a heart attack. But researchers later went back and they found out there was actually information for 22 countries. If you picked another six countries, you could have shown the complete opposite. So basically, he cherry-picked the data. And that goes on a lot. That goes on a lot in medicine.
Yes.
And there's various techniques that I go through in the book that shows how they can cherry-pick the data.
That's really helpful to know. Definitely. Definitely. Now, tell us where people can find you.
Well, first of all, I have a website, jackomd180.com. So that is an educational website. So, you know, I have an offer for your listeners. So we call this the Energy Reclaim Playbook. So I think there are three things most patients want. They want, if you look at it from a health standpoint, at the end of the day, if you take everything the patients complain about, what they want is better energy. Okay. So if you go to the website, there's 1180 articles on exercise, nutrition, things that you can do to improve your energy.
Right.
On the website, you can actually get the book, and the book is going to tell you, help you wade through this medical misinformation. And I show you kind of the tricks that are used to misguide you in some cases. And then on the website, there's two free guides, one for women's health, one is for men's health. And then we're going to have this doctor cheat sheet I was referring to with 7 questions that you can ask your doctor. So they can go that. So that's jackomd180.com. You can get the book there as well. You can get the book at Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. And then I'm on all the social media, which I think you'll put in the notes, I hope. But anyway, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Truth Social, and YouTube.
I love it. And you can find your book on Amazon, correct? All right. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
It's a bit of a long read, but I try to make it entertaining. It's not dry. I start off with each chapter has a little bit of a story, and I start with each chapter with a little bit of a quote that kind of gives you an insight as to what the chapter is going to be about.
I love that. I love that. And for the listeners out there, it turns out that one of the most powerful things that we can do for our health is also ask better questions, stay curious, and become a real partner in our own care. Dr. Joe Jacko reminded us today that we don't have to choose between trusting good medicine and thinking for ourselves. The best patients do both. And Dr. Jacko, I want to thank you for being here. Thank you for telling our listeners about all these wonderful things that people don't really think about because we were taught to trust our doctors, do what they say. And sometimes it's good to be our own doctors and to really look at search for questions to ask and answers and maybe keep a diary if you're not feeling good and do the best that you can to gather up information. So when you do speak with your doctor, you could ask the right questions and provide the right information as well.
Yeah. Let me just add one thing. You mentioned a word, curious. just now. I don't know what was in the book. I know what the last sentence I wrote in the book, and it was curiosity is the key that unlocks critical thinking. So that curiosity, stay curious, wonder about everything, wonder about the sky, why the sky is blue, just be in wonderment of everything you come in contact with each day. So I'm glad you use that word curious.
Listener there, if this gave you something to think about before your next appointment, share it with someone who wants to take a smarter control of their own health. And I have to say, thank you so much once again, Dr. Jacko, for being on the show, sharing your knowledge, sharing the information that you've provided today, because a lot of people really need to take control of their health. And if they don't like what they hear from one doctor, go to a second opinion, start taking charge of your own health and ask questions and start trying to out information, and don't be afraid to ask or to not accept something once you hear it. We are in a system where we're a little bamboozled out there, and we really need to take care of our cells and our body and make smart choices. And so we really need to think twice about everything that's told to us and to take charge of our overall health. So you made us realize that, and you kind of brought it to light. So I thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Well, you have a great day. I appreciate you.
You as well.